Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to episode 69 of the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko.
And I'm Mike Kesslering.
Got a great podcast for y'all this week. A number of really, really interesting events to chat about. Off the top, work from home. More and more of us are doing that these days. It's becoming permanent for many companies these days. Is this the way of the future? Silvercorp increases its friendly offer for Guyana Goldfields by a stunning 88% as a third-party bid emerges. What is going to happen next at this incredible bidding war, the first of the post-COVID-19 era? Private equity firm Advent reneges on its commitment to acquire Forescout and gets sued, so this one made its way into a Delaware court. What are the potential outcomes of this deal gone bad? And lastly, Spotify signs Joe Rogan as exclusive podcast for a rumored $100 million deal. That's right, $100 million allegedly into Joe Rogan's jeans for exclusivity on his podcast. Why did Spotify's market cap increase by nearly $6 billion on this deal? So a number of super, super interesting things to chat about. First, I wanted to talk about what this entire coronavirus pandemic has brought a whole work from home movement. We previously, especially people in finance, you look at different capital markets positions, this is the type of position in industry where it's a lot of face time, you got to be in the office, yada, yada, yada. And many people in this business didn't think that they could operate efficiently or effectively from home. But that idea has been completely turned on the head in no sector more than in the technology sector. You're seeing a number of large technology firms being like, look, this is working out phenomenally well. Specifically, we've heard from Twitter and Spotify both this week announcing the transition to a permanent shift to remote work, work from home, because they're finding increased productivity, decreased costs, and much, much easier to run. With the the increased use of cloud computing has made things significantly easier. And no doubt everyone knows Zoom Video, Google Hangout Meets, and things of that nature that make video conferencing easier than ever. So in addition to Twitter and Spotify, social networking giant Facebook also announced that it expects half of its 50,000 strong workforce to be working from home within the next 10 years. Interesting aspect that I wanted to discuss is this transition from a centralized office to a distributed workforce has significant implications for commercial real estate, number one, and company culture, number two, that will play out for years to come. The other interesting thing is, say if you're a Silicon Valley tech company where it's incredibly expensive to live, you could see, you know, people moving out of, say, San Francisco, Southern California, to less expensive jurisdictions, less expensive places to live for a better kind of work-life balance, where your money goes a lot further. And taking that step even further is that, you know, what's the distributed workforce of the future look like? Is it all, you know, North Americans, or will you have, you know, team members in Bangladesh and Thailand? I know we do a lot of work through Fiverr.com, which is freelancing work on this podcast specifically. And we have people working on our podcast from Jamaica, from Bangladesh, and the Middle East. So all these jurisdictions throughout the world, which naturally wouldn't happen without the internet and some of these apps and services such as Fiverr.com. So what are your thoughts on the implications of this whole work from home movement and how managers are realizing, look, we can not only do this effectively, but it's perhaps even better than the standard office environment?
Yeah, so I guess some of the implications to start with would be, I guess, one of the main things to remember is when any of these companies are talking about their targets, they're now, like say, for example, in Canada, we have an example with Shopify where they're saying that, you know, that any of their employees can work from home indefinitely now. They announced that this week and that they want to be digital by default. And that that would be for the rest of the year and then into the future, but that their offices would remain closed until the new year. And then after that, that they would be looking at targeting a 20 to 50% capacity. And I'm seeing similar verbiage from the other tech companies is where they're really just expressing how many, like the employee usage of the office as a percentage of the office space capacity. And really what I would remember there is that that may not actually cause a, you know, a major impact on commercial real estate in the short term beyond negative sentiment, as companies, they're just talking about that capacity. And so they're just not going to fully utilize their office space. But moving into the future, that's certainly a negative thing because yes, many of these companies are signing 10-year leases or terms in that kind of time frame. So then when you're looking, you know, into the longer term future, this could become quite an issue for commercial office space, because if you're looking at an unutilized asset, you'd look at, well, why are we keeping all this office space and just utilizing 20 to 50% of that? It may make sense to just get rid of half of that office space. And if many companies are doing that. So in Canada, with the Shopify example, I did just want to point out that in the Ottawa market, they have about 425,000 square feet of leased real estate in the city. And just for some context, in Canada as a whole in the office space market, there was 5.9 million square feet of net absorption in 2019. And what that means, net absorption, is just the square footage of tenants moving in versus tenants moving out in the country for the year. So that's 7.2% of the net absorption of Canada as a whole. So it definitely would be a material impact to say if Spotify just got rid of all their real estate, which, you know, I don't see that happening. But as well, the other thing to look into with Twitter is that they did seem to have a caveat where they said that if the employee is in a role and situation that enables them to work from home, then they will be able to work from home. But, you know, it does look like they are earmarking certain roles to be eligible and certain roles to be ineligible for working from home. But I mean, you know, speaking from, you know, our point of view, we're a company that we did, you know, create policies that allowed us to easily transition to working from home. I believe we've talked about it on the podcast before. And, you know, I think that's going to be very common moving into the future, especially with everything becoming more cloud-based. It's just very, very to do so.
Yeah, especially with high-speed internet, 5G services, video conferencing, and things such as that nature. However, you know, offices, traditional offices will still serve somewhat of a role. For example, Shopify said that it would retain offices around the country as recruitment hubs, but would not expect most employees to regularly show up in person. So understand that, you know, they could be used for training employees. And once they get into the groove, then they could transition to work from home. So it won't be obviously 100% across all office type positions. However, you know, if you're a long-term investor in commercial real estate, this is a trend that you really need to pay a lot of attention to, and certainly something to be worried about. Historically, commercial real estate has really been a bulletproof type asset class where you can expect that these high-quality downtown commercial office buildings to be leased up for the most part. But you know, is that assumption still valid as more and more companies accept a work-from-home mentality and have that deeply ingrained within their culture? So it's something for commercial real estate investors to ponder. It won't be a near-term thing, but it's certainly something to think about within a long-term investment framework. On to some M&A news. Really, really exciting event this week. So we have our first corporate bidding war of the post-coronavirus era. This week, Guyana Gold Fields received an unsolicited all-cash bid from an unnamed interloper. So we've been covering this situation, and it's important to note, a bit of disclosure, we are long a Guyana Gold Fields short Silvercorp stock in our arbitrage fund. So what's happening, what's been happening with Guyana Gold Fields is they previously had a friendly deal with Silvercorp, a cash and share deal, and then Grand Columbia Gold came over the top with a significantly increased unsolicited bid that beat Silvercorp for Guyana Gold Fields. Now, Guyana Gold Fields rejected the Grand Columbia bid, which we discussed on last week's podcast, citing conditions on the deal, although they did indicate they liked the valuation. So what happened over the weekend was a third party got involved here with an all-cash bid, and it was an unnamed interloper. They did not name who it was, nor the price. However, what this did was it forced Silvercorp to raise their friendly bid dramatically. So by a stunning 88%, they increased the consideration for Guyana. Obviously, shareholders such as ourselves extremely happy with what's happening here. This new bid from Silvercorp represents an enormous 187% premium to Guyana Gold Fields' unaffected price. So a substantial bidding war happening here. And this is the sort of bidding war that can make an arbitrager's year. And I suspect it isn't over yet. So if you're an arbitrageur or you enjoy, you know, participating in merger arbitrage, you better get involved in Guyana Gold Fields' deal, or you know you don't want to be left out of bidding wars, because that's where the real merger arbitrage money is made. The other thing that we need to note is that we haven't heard from Grand Columbia with respect to this third party all cash bid, nor Silvercorp's increased bid. So, you know, a lot of news flow could come out. Typically, if an interloper isn't interested in participating, they tend to come out and say that immediately. It's been, this new bid was revealed on Monday. It's now Friday. Haven't heard from Grand Columbia. Haven't heard from this unnamed third-party all-cash bidder. So who knows where that's going to go. The most shocking thing of all is that the Guyana Gold Fields share price was still at a discount to the Silvercorp bid. You like never ever see that. Typically, arbitragers will trade at a premium just to have that upside optionality of another bidder coming in. And here in this situation, you have two potential other bidders. So I was just absolutely shocked how this stock isn't at a premium to the Silvercorp consideration. But that just goes to show you that there are vast inefficiencies, especially in a small cap Canadian deal such as this. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that, you know, if you don't know by now, then you should know we're in a massive gold bull market. We previously discussed that, you know, every deal announced over the past 2 to 3 months in Canada has been a gold M&A deal. So those stocks, many of them hitting 52-week highs, some of them, some junior gold producers hitting all-time highs. You have massive fiscal and monetary stimulus globally. So exceptionally good macro environment for the precious metal. And that's really just created a bid under all these junior, mid-tier, and senior gold companies. So it's a sector to watch if you're an investor. You should definitely be paying attention to the gold sector because, like I said, it's a pretty exceptional bull market. A lot of deals happening in this space. What are your thoughts on this super, super interesting and exciting bidding war for Guyana Gold Fields?
No, absolutely. And from my perspective, also very excited about this. Multiple bidders in this is just, you know, great as a shareholder, but also just a follower of the M&A space. It's you know, bidding wars, are just exciting to watch. And you do bring up an interesting point about it trading at a discount still. As you mentioned, typically these will trade at a premium. And typically that's some of the rationale there is that as a merger arbitrager, you want to be the beneficiary of some of the irrational thinking that will go on behind a bidding war. Because a bidding war in and of itself, typically, you know, there becomes ego involved and these assets that, this isn't specific to Guyana, but typically you'll see a company that, you know, an assets will be marked at, you know, X, And, you know, after a while, they're valued at 1.5 times X just because of, you know, irrational thinking, and companies sharpen their pencils with regards to synergies, and you just see higher bids. And so that's really a tailwind that you want to take advantage of.
Yeah, the auction, the so-called auction winner's curse.
Absolutely. But the auction winner's curse for you as the merger arbitrage, that's no curse for you. That's, as you mentioned, that's making your year. One thing I was curious about, Julian, do you care to speculate at all whether, you know, who this third bidder that was unnamed was, or not in terms of the actual company itself, but, you know, any speculation in terms of whether you think it would be a strategic acquirer or perhaps a financial buyer, aka a private equity fund?
Oh, certainly a strategic buyer. You rarely see, you know, financial sponsors in the gold sectors. It's quite rare, not totally unprecedented, but pretty rare. However, you know, an all cash bid in the hundreds of millions of dollars, you know, this one's now approaching $200 million. So from that perspective, you know, you got to be a sizable company to put that sort of cash down on the table. So my best guess, my speculation would be more of a senior type gold producer. Certainly they become more disciplined with respect to their M&A. But like I said, it is a gold bull market. We are seeing more and more deals, more and more consolidation in the space. Guyana Goldfields has been a long-term underperforming asset, and clearly there's a lot of underutilized asset here. Asset value is significantly higher than the share price reflected, and we're really seeing that come to the forefront in this bidding war. So it's a really interesting situation. You better believe that we will continue to cover this situation on a go-forward basis. Now, on the other side of M&A, and for the most part, historically, the vast majority of M&A deals close over the past 10 years. It's been roughly, you know, 94% of deals close in the U.S., and you have 6% that unfortunately fail, which is what happened on Forescout and Advent, which we're going to get into. But with respect to kind of what's happening on Guyana, is that historically, you know, you're always going to have deals fall apart. In any year, you'll have a handful of these. However, you know, to help offset that, offset the average 6% of deals that do fail, you tend to have 6% of deals that do get a superior proposal or a bidding war or an increase in consideration. So a situation like Guyana helps offset a situation like Forescout, where an ARB would lose money. So it's kind of gives and takes in this process, and you just kind of got to roll with the punches as they happen. So onto the Forescout file, which for disclosure, we also have a position in. So on that, what happened here was on the day that Forescout Technologies acquisition by private equity firm Advent was supposed to close, Advent got cold feet and tried to terminate the $1.9 billion transaction by claiming a material adverse effect. Now, what a material adverse effect means, it basically is a legal term that's structured into definitive merger agreements, and it refers to an event or a situation in which the value of a company is lowered dramatically due to some unforeseen event. Now, specifically on the Advent Forescout deal, Advent is claiming that COVID-19 was a material adverse effect on Forescout's business. They did miss their Q1 projections or forecast by roughly 7%. However, if you do look at the material adverse effect clause in the merger agreement, they just specifically carved out effects of a pandemic, which is clearly what happened here. So, you know, by carving it out, it clearly indicates that an acquirer cannot claim that a pandemic would be a material adverse effect. So clearly, Advent got cold feet here. All conditions of this deal have been satisfied, and they should be closing the deal. However, they are not. So this really begs to question, you know, the reputation of Advent as a buyer. I always like the Warren Buffett quote. He stated that it takes 20 years to build a reputation and 5 minutes to ruin it. If you think about that, you'll do things differently. So clearly, buyers who, you know, try to engage in horse trading or, you know, abandon the deal at the altar, they typically end up with their reputation in tatters. It's really a bad thing to enter a deal and then, you know, try to wiggle your way out of it. You know, it's definitely not good for the old reputation there. What Advent's claiming here in their last minute change of heart, and, you know, fact of the matter is they're breaching the merger agreement by not closing, is, you know, it's 100% COVID related, is what has been revealed in the court documents. Also, what was revealed that was really, really interesting that I picked up is that Advent said it was in negotiations about a, quote, an alternative transaction. So who knows what that could represent? Perhaps it could be, you know, some sort of potential recut in price. And if they do recut the price, you got to go through this whole process again, stage another shoulder, enter another merger agreement, stage another shareholder vote. So it is really, really unfortunate what the buyer is trying to do here. But fortunately, as investors hope, Forescout sued Advent for specific performance in an attempt to get a judge to order Advent to close the acquisition at the agreed upon deal price of $33 per share. What specific performance means, it's another legal term that effectively, in which a judge can force the party within the agreement to perform as expected. So in this case specifically, a judge would order or could order Advent to close if in fact the judge does not find that a material adverse effect has occurred. And this one, Judge Sam Glasscock is leading it in Delaware. A couple or a few ways in which this one could turn out. The judge could order Advent to close at $33 a share, and Advent would be forced to pay that price. They could perhaps, before ruling, strike a different deal at a lowered price. My best guess is kind of $25 to $30 a share. Alternatively, the judge could order financial damages. You know, that has happened in the past. If podcast listeners are interested in looking to a precedent, one would be the Hexion-Huntsman deal that happened in 2008, in which the judge ordered financial damages, I believe north of $1 billion, in which the buyer had to pay. And another precedent in which a judge ordered, there was specific performance and the judge ordered the buyer to actually close the deal on the initial terms. Precedent occurred in 2001. Tyson Foods was forced to go through its merger, its acquisition of IBP. So that's another one that investors could look into. But nonetheless, at this point, I mean, Forescout stock is at $23 and change, significantly lower than the $33 per share deal price. So a lot of uncertainty in the market, but hopefully for you know, merger arbitragers or just market participants in general, or even, I mean, as society, we need to uphold the rule of law. Otherwise, it's chaos. So I certainly hope Advent, well, number one, I hope as a Forescout shareholder that Advent is, you know, held to the terms of the deal. But then, you know, just a matter of fairness in society and rule of law, you like to see contracts to hold up. Otherwise, what is the purpose of a contract if one of the party can just, you know, breach the contract with no negative ramifications? Then there's really no rule of law. There's no purpose in having any sort of contracts if people are going to obey it and, you know, have any sort of accountability or ramifications for just breaching the terms of the contract. So really, really interesting situation in the world of disputed M&A and deals gone bad. Mike, what are your thoughts on this one here?
Yeah, just one thing I'd like to point out as well in terms of the impending court case is that the judge has actually, it was just today that they set the hearing date for June 2nd and 3rd. So that's within the outside date. So one little bit of positive news for Forescout shareholders is that, you know, it is very quick, like that this is a fast moving process with COVID and everything going on with the court system right now. A little bit of the investor angst was around if this did get to a hearing, you know, was it going to be, you know, over a month from now? So that is a positive to see it within a couple of weeks as well. Right now also seems to be where it's trading currently, does seem to be, you know, a very interesting the risk reward scenario after this news, after the lawsuit and everything, you know, it certainly has changed and becomes kind of interesting as, you know, with the break fee of $100 million or $2 a share, I'm seeing kind of the estimate that the downside price could be in the $19 to $21 per share. Whereas if you get a deal recut, potentially that's in the anywhere from $23 to $26 range are some of the estimates I'm seeing. So that does seem interesting. Do you, if there is a deal cut, recut, you know, where are you seeing that range, Julian?
Like I said, probably in the $25 to $30 a per share range, if I were to guess, kind of, you know, 10 to 15% lower. Interesting, we have seen one deal recut in this cycle. It was a strategic deal, not a leveraged buyout. So that was on the BorgWarner Delphi auto parts transaction where they actually recut the deal 5% lower. Again, that was kind of early in the process prior to the shareholder vote, as it should be. But, you know, clearly Advent got last minute cold feet, change of heart, likely based off the Q1 numbers. Like I said, they missed by 7%. So it's sad to see a supposed long-term financial acquirer taking a short-term decision. But nonetheless, this has major implications for the M&A market. If you look at Tech Data, which is currently, you know, under a merger agreement with another buyout firm, Apollo, that is trading very, very close to Forescout Technologies here with all the Forescout developments. Tech Data tends to trade on that. So we're also long Tech Data. So for the future of the M&A market, you know, clearly we want this to rule in Forescout's favor such that buyers can't sign a deal and then walk away with no ramifications. And we want to see the upholding of the rule of law and specifically contract law. So I'll leave that one at that. Wanted to touch on some really, really crazy, exciting news in the podcast space. So streaming company Spotify signed comedian Joe Rogan to make his podcast exclusive to the Spotify platform in a deal worth a rumored $100 million. Episodes of the extremely popular podcast, The Joe Rogan Experience, of which I'm a big fan. I was actually this morning listening to his podcast with Tony Hawk, you know, my childhood hero. It's a really good podcast. I encourage you to check it out. So the Joe Rogan Experience, with its estimated 200 million downloads per month, which is just insane. It's like, who doesn't listen to the Joe Rogan Experience podcast, right? With 200 million rumored downloads per month, this will begin airing audio and video exclusively to the Spotify platform starting in September. In addition to that, like, Rogan's one of the most popular YouTube podcasters, often with millions of people watching each episode, and YouTube's going to lose him on their platform. It's a major hit for YouTube, huge win for Spotify on this deal. As we previously discussed on this podcast, Spotify has been on a podcast acquisition spree. They previously acquired Gimlet Media, Anchor, and Parcast over the past year. And financial implications, so say this was a $100 million deal. The financial terms were undisclosed. Look at what happened with Spotify's stock after the announcement. Their market cap increased by about $5 billion on the news of the Rogan deal. So what does that tell you? Joe Rogan was massively, massively undervalued if they paid $100 million for $5 billion in market cap gains. What are your thoughts on this? Just wicked deal for Joe here.
Yeah, wicked deal for all around, really. One of the comparisons I was seeing was to the Howard Stern SiriusXM deal back in 2006, which was a pretty major cornerstone for satellite radio for Sirius. But you know, in my own thoughts, I don't really think it's as a perfect example, as the Joe Rogan podcasts will still be free. And it is just a licensing deal where he's not going to be an employee of Spotify. He'll still be producing it. For me, I guess the most interesting and newsworthy aspect of this was, as you had mentioned, the YouTube aspect, as Spotify's video platform is still just really in its infancy. Personally, I've had Spotify Premium since 2014, and I had no idea that they even had a video feature. So, you know, I'm not a perfect example, but, you know, just an indication that it's still very much in its infancy. You know, it does seem like it is higher risk for Rogan, you know, long term, I guess, if he's worried about losing some of his YouTube viewers, but still is going to be producing his YouTube clips, which Spotify is allowing him to do, to his 8.5 million YouTube subscribers. And so by doing that, it's really just kind of a funnel into the Spotify platform and to route listeners by getting these viral clips on YouTube, route them to the Spotify platform so that they can listen to the entire long form content. And really just looking at the math, when you'd mentioned, some of Spotify's other acquisitions in the podcasting space, you know, it really just comes down to what we had discussed earlier. And that's the margin dynamics of music versus podcasting. And you know, for any music content, they have to pay a certain amount of royalties. It's in that 10 to 15%, which is, you know, just coming straight out of their gross margins. Whereas you do not have that in podcasting, or at least in this scenario, they are able to amortize that out through their entire user base. For example, with this Joe Rogan acquisition, they are assuming that they are going to be getting a ton more Spotify premium subscribers because of this. It's basically that the Joe Rogan podcast will be free on Spotify, but they will have a more robust catalog behind the paywall. So it's really just kind of a teaser to get you on the platform. And ultimately, in terms of a podcast worth, this does make sense that Spotify is the 10,000 pound gorilla in the room, able to pay more than other platforms. Number one, because of the capital that they've raised so far, but as well, just thinking of the dynamics of a podcast selling ads, they're typically able to get $20 to $30 per thousand impressions. If you do the math on a subscription basis, getting additional subscribers that is a reoccurring revenue is obviously a more interesting revenue model than having to continually sell ads. But overall, this is very big news for podcasts in general. And some of the analysis that I was reading is this, increases the valuation of some of those top podcasts that are in the top 100, definitely increases the valuation of those by, I'd seen estimates of 20 to 30%. So this is, great news all around.
Wow. Some implications here. Well, number one, I'm going to have to download Spotify because I got to listen to my Joe Rogan Experience podcast. So they'll get themselves at least one additional MAU, MAU, monthly active user. I'll be one of those. And, number two, Spotify, if you want to chat, perhaps we could strike a deal exclusivity on the Absolute Return podcast. We'll see about that. Perhaps we won't get the $100 million that Joe Rogan did, but Spotify, call us if you want to chat. Other than that,
lines are open.
Yeah, exactly. Other than that, that's about it for us this week, folks, on episode 69 of the Absolute Return podcast. If you liked it, please leave us a review, and you can always check out more at absolutereturnpodcast.com. You should definitely check us out on Twitter. Give us a follow. Mike, where can they find you on the old Twitter?
It is M_Kesslering.
And I'm on the Twitter at Julian Klimochko, KlyMochko. But until next week, we wish you all the best in your trading, investing, speculating, short selling, and arbitraging. And until next week, have a good one. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.